Look at that, and it's exactly 3:30. You know what time that is? It's time.
It's
time. We're going to start. We are going to start. Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdal. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Make Me Smart Daily Edition. I really can't speak, I promise. me and Kimberly Adams here to make today make sense somehow.
It's almost as if you speak for a living. So anyway, that's what the plan, at least.
I say I've got the easiest job at Marketplace, right? All I have to do is speak my mother tongue into a microphone. It's unbelievable. Oh, my goodness.
Except that whole, like, anxiety about talking to millions and millions of people at once.
But don't think about that.
Don't think about it. Yeah. All right. So let's start with the news fix, then the Make Me Smile, and then in 15 minutes ish, we're done.
We'll be done.
All right, you go first, Kai.
Okay, I actually, and I'm channeling my inner Molly Wood one more time. I've got two today because they're both just so remarkable. The first one is John Cornyn, senator from Texas, Republican senator from Texas, announced today that he is going to introduce a bill to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. And the thing I thought of was, number one, how remarkable it is that John Cornyn, a senator from Texas, is introducing this bill. But number two, the thing I thought about, honestly, was Martin Luther King Day.
I was just thinking
and
that, John McCain.
How long that took. It took years and years and years and years. And once again, in 2020, the speed of events, right? We've had the speed of this recession and the pandemic, and now we have the speed of this change. And I'm just kind of gobsmacked.
Well, and I thought about that too, because, I mean, you have people who we just hold up as national heroes now, like John McCain and many other figures who were just like, Martin Luther King Day is a holiday. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
later came around. But it does sort of reflect what you're saying about just how quickly public opinion has shifted on this.
Yep.
Now, in terms of this being a senator from Texas, I think that kind of helped move it along because Juneteenth is very much it started as
a
Texas thing because it was, for those who don't know, it's a holiday marking when people who were enslaved in Texas found out, like, years after the Emancipation Proclamation that they were actually free and you know, poor souls had been still working under, you know, slavery conditions despite that. So anyhow, so it's been a holiday in Texas, I think, for a while now. So it probably doesn't cost him all that much to let his name
be on
it.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. That's a really good point. And thank you for bringing that up. But still, holy
cow.
Sorry,
that's very cynical.
No, come on. There is a political calculation to everything in the best of times and uber everything in these times. So yeah, no, that's a good point. But anyway, so that's one thing that I wanted to make sure people noted. The other thing, And this goes under this thing I've been tweeting about every time I see coronavirus and COVID statistics, which is that we have given up. Two things, one of which you actually put in the Slack this morning. The FAA says it's not going to make it mandatory to wear a mask on an airplane. You got to wear a seatbelt. You can't go to the bathroom when the no getting up light is on, but you don't want to wear a mask? That's fine. That, to me, is just, it's another entry in the category of we have given up. Item number two along those lines, also which crossed my Twitter feed this morning. The governor of Nebraska has told local officials, that is to say county and municipalities in the state of Nebraska, that if they require people to wear masks in public buildings, those governments, the cities and counties in Nebraska, will not receive any of the $100 million of federal coronavirus aid money that the governor of Nebraska expects to get. Wow.
So.
Yes, ma'am.
Last night, I put on my mask and I went downstairs to the front desk of my building to pick up a package.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to catch one of our the people who work there overnight. It's a black woman, and she's worked at this building longer than I've lived here, and she's very chatty. And I was checking in with her. She asked about my mom, all these things. And she told me that in the last couple of months, 7 people in her family have died of COVID-19.
Mm.
7. In her husband's family, 3. Mm. And I think one of the reasons that people are so able to kind of just give up and think it's not mm-hmm. big of a deal is because it's hitting such targeted segments of the population very hard, and then some people aren't feeling it at all.
Right.
And
right.
so I have other friends who don't know anybody who's been sick, don't know anyone who's died, and they're really chafing. And I'm thinking, I saw somebody post on Slack about, you know, people waiting in 8 to 12 hour lines for unemployment benefits, people who are having to go to food banks for the first time, and that's a hit to their dignity. And if you don't know anyone who's gone through this and you don't see it, I can really imagine how you think, okay, this is too much. Mm-hmm. But the second you talk to somebody who's been sick and can tell you how terrifying it was, or who's lost someone in their family, you know, ideally it wouldn't take you personally experiencing something for you to care about it. Ideally, empathy is there, but we seem to have a bit of an empathy deficit.
We do. There is an empathy gap. But of course, that breaks down on racial and class lines, and that explains so much of what's going on. It's kind of amazing.
But that does lead into my news fix, which was a fascinating article. It was an interview in the Washington Post with Dr. Anthony Fauci. And you and I have been talking about the potential second wave of COVID-19 cases and deaths and all those things. And Dr. Fauci was saying, sorry, friends, we're still in the first wave.
Yeah.
And it's just that cases may be going down in places like New York, but they're spiking elsewhere because dial it back.
B, straight B. How about a B?
B minus for efforts at slowing the spread. Those initial rounds of lockdown slowed the spread enough that we didn't see New York-style spikes everywhere. But we are reopening in many places, and folks are as you said, giving up.
Yep.
And so that first wave, just congratulations, everyone. We flattened the curve, but that just means the curve lasts longer. So he pointed out that we're still in the first wave. We're still seeing thousands and thousands of new cases every day. Lots of people still getting sick and dying. Hospitalizations going up in a lot of places. So it's terrifying.
Yeah, it truly is. Jody just slacked, just as a reminder, we're going to talk about wave 1.5, let's call it 1.5, with our doctor guy, this friend of Molly's that went to high school with her on Tuesday. And we're going to talk about all that stuff and sort of what's going on with that. So just a little forward promo there, if you will. But it's, yeah, Fauci clearly, he did an interview with McClatchy, I think, in which it comes off that he is more than a little bit worried and he's being really open about it, which is different for him.
You know. How nice that we're hearing from him in all of these news outlets, because he was on 1A the other day also, because when was the last time we had a White House briefing from the task force?
Oh, yeah. It's been like a month, right? More?
I think more.
Yeah,
I think more.
Sure.
But, you
for
know,
sure.
this is why media is important, guys.
Yeah.
Please support your local journalism outlet, hopefully public radio, because as you've been tweeting, Kyle, we're losing a lot of folks in this economic environment.
It has not been a great week.
No, it has not.
Happy place.
Happy place. Happy place. Okay. I like your happy place.
I do, too. I like mine, too. I think mine is great. I may even sing it if I can. So anyway.
Go.
So, all right. Well, we'll see how it goes. So John Bolton is out with his, fair to say, long-awaited book, the former national security advisor to President Trump. Left on not great terms. He's been writing this book forever, chose not to testify, was not subpoenaed by House Democrats, and then Senate Republicans said, yeah, no, we're fine, even after he volunteered to testify during the trial. The book is out. It is, as you would imagine, I don't want to say salacious, but it's gossipy about the President of the United States. And Bolton has been dumped on a bit for not testifying in political procedures, but instead waiting to sell his book. And Lin-Manuel Miranda,
his multi-million dollar book deal.
Right. Multi-million dollar book deal. The book, of course, is titled The Room Where It Happened. Okay? So Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote the song called The Room Where It Happened in a musical called Hamilton, tweeted today, he said this, and I'm going to give it a whack and I'm going to mess it up. Here we go. Let me tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and dreamed of glory. You have no control. Who lives, who dies, who bars your song title to write a cash-in book when they could have testified before Congress, tells your story.
I wasn't holding a microphone, I'd be clapping.
I should have actually listened to the song before I did that. But anyway.
That was fantastic.
Come on.
If I give you a beat, will you do the room where it happened?
I will not, but I am going to go listen to that soundtrack now because that actually gets me to a really happy place in a lot of ways.
Yeah. No, I mean, great music.
And a nice little pokey in the eye tweet there from Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah. Can he sue for that?
No, I don't think he can copyright titles.
Mm.
But maybe lyrics? I don't know.
Yeah. Trademark? Copyright? I don't know. Anywho. All right. Well, my happy place is basically cookies. because what will fix racism more than cookies, right?
Yes. Look, man.
Because sometimes that's how diversity initiatives feel. It's like, oh, here we have this huge, giant problem. Have a cookie.
Have a cookie.
In this case, this is another Washington Post story. I guess I'm just like obsessed today.
Hometown paper.
Well, no, my hometown paper is the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Yes, of course. You're right. As soon as I said it, I was like, she's not really from Washington.
No. So D.C., several chefs in D.C. and now from all over have organized a virtual bake sale. So all of these sort of out-of-work pastry chefs and bakeries that maybe are suffering and not getting a lot of business, they're doing an online bake sale and donating some of the proceeds to social justice causes. And they're calling it Bakers Against Racism. And they've got hundreds and hundreds of chefs and pastry chefs and all over the world, basically, baking cookies. And somebody has like a strawberry rhubarb pie and cakes and all sorts of things. And, you know, on the Instagram page, which I only recently signed up for Instagram because of my uncle. Oh, yeah. I don't have a Facebook account, and I was avoiding Instagram because it's basically a data collection tool and not really here for it. but when my uncles went from 200 Instagram followers to like 80,000 over the course of
really?
2 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
They've got more than 80,000 Instagram
Good
followers now.
That's
insane.
Great.
I basically got on Instagram just so I could try to help ward off the trolls. Anyway. So now that I have an Instagram account, I can see all the pictures of all of these pastries that are being baked and sold and proceeds donated. And it, you know, makes me a little hungry.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Wait, what's the hashtag? Bakers Against Racism?
Yeah, Bakers Against Racism.
We can go with that.
Yeah,
that's
and
excellent.
They've got lots of cute videos and all sorts of things. So that made me smile. And as you said, it's been kind of a grim week. Well,
yeah, kind of has.
Year, month, I don't know.
Only Thursday. All right, cookies, a little singing, and some news. We're done. Thanks for tuning in. Back tomorrow with the Friday Happy Hour episode, Economics on Tap. I will be having, I promise you, a beer. Ms. Adams will, I'm sure, be having some kind of much more sophisticated mixed drink. In the meanwhile, send us your questions and comments, voice memos as well. Please make me smart at marketplace.org, and we will see you tomorrow, everybody.
That sounded a little judgy, Kai.
No, not at all. I'm a beer guy, and I'm proud that I'm a beer guy. And that's all I'm saying.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner, and our senior producer is Jody Becker. Ben Heathcote produces video with the help of our intern, Ethan Peretz, and thanks to writer-producer Erica Phillips.
Daniel Ramirez engineered the broadcast today. Theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday, and Daniel, the executive director of On Demand, is Sitar Nieves. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. And there we go. Tomorrow's Friday.
I should bake this weekend.
I should drink beer. How about that?
Both of those things seem very good.
They can both happen. They are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I do have hard cider in my fridge, which is kind of close to
the
beer.
Hard cider. I don't understand the hard cider thing.
It's apple-y.
Aha.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.